welcome back to another exciting episode of Extras Features Enru. Today we have a fabulous director all the way from my favorite country of Canada, from Winnipeg, which is one of my favorite places I've been to in my life. Bevan Clausen?
Yep, that's it.
All right, I got one right. I usually screw up everybody's name, so you're one of the few. Welcome to the show. Your film of Games and Escapes is available on Amazon and I'm sure a billion other places, but you can tell us all at the end. So let's start at the beginning. Where does this come from? I find your film goes in many directions. It doesn't really have a primary focus. Hmm. And I don't know if you got that from other people.
Yeah, it's I started making films like in my early 30s, and so they're all very personal. They're all about trying to work out stuff, and this is about a guy, not myself, but a guy trying to work stuff out, right? And it's got some culture wars kind of components to it, in that you've got these people that, you know, an environmental kind of guy who is really concerned about the environment. You've got business and you've got a religious person, and they all kind of come together and kind of clash, and all those parts exist in me. And so I was trying to work something out through that.
Well, did you find that you did a lot for the music? I mean, things about beaches and nature and a forest and your opening songs. You're kind of leading me that way right off the beginning.
I'm trying to remember the music, and I'm trying to remember.
Well, I'll let you come back. How about that?
Thank you. You know what?
You can come back. You can, while you're talking to me, you can pull it up and it'll all pop back up on your brain. So, continuing on, you have so many locations for an indie film. You have a house location.
Yeah.
You have office locations. You have a restaurant location. You have a doctor's office. So, how did you get all these?
Yeah, and I had a job, like a 5-day-a-week job doing it. So, one of the locations is my office. It's like we hauled stuff up to the 10th floor for shooting in the office, and my co-writer, he knew a restaurant, and in the park, and yeah, just everywhere. It was like it was an adventure, right? And trying to keep things like it's a Winnipeg story, so it's a lot of Winnipeg in it too.
Well, I agree with that. Now, hang on, you're filming your office and you're bringing stuff up to the 10th floor, so you didn't use just stuff in your office.
No, we had to deal with security and permissions, and so every day we bring all our stuff into the elevator up to the 10th floor, unload it, figure out where we're shooting, and shoot. Yeah, it was fun. It's got to be fun, right? That's why we make films.
Well, I think being an indie filmmaker, if it's not fun, why would you do it?
Exactly.
I mean, I hope you're doing it for the glory in the end. I hope you're on your way there, that maybe it'll be a payoff. But I think indie filmmaking is a labor of love.
Exactly. It really is.
Now, how about a doctor's office? That looked like a real doctor's office to me.
It was a real doctor. It was the main actor, Lyle Morris. His friend's dad was a doctor. And we got the place. I think it was a Saturday late. Yeah.
Fair enough. So I want to discuss, it does revolve around a board game a lot, this film. It does go with a board game, comes out of the board game.
Yeah.
Does the board game actually exist?
We created it. In fact, my co-writer, he wanted to make an iPad game out of it. We actually got a game developer. If you look at the credits, there's a game developer, and we brought a game developer in that we were acquainted with, and we developed this thing. So yeah, you could play it. It was a real game. And that's a central part of it. Really represents what's inside the main character, Patrick's head. This is what he's working out. He's trying to figure out life.
So did you guys play the game on breaks or anything, or do you still play the game?
No, it's like, I don't know where it went. I think it's over there. Life moves on. The next movie comes up and you keep going, right?
That's fair. I did notice some season changes in this. That could be you adding touches Or how long did it take you to film it, and did you film over multiple seasons? To me, it does look like different seasons at times.
Yeah, it was over like over a year, and you know, indie kind of scheduling. So basically, you try to get everyone together when you can, and you just keep going. So because it gets really cold in Winnipeg, we tried to keep it during the warm seasons, but. Yeah, it took a while to shoot. I think it was like 8 months or something.
That's a long time for
an indie film. Just sort of here and there, get up to the office when you can, and the doctor's office, and you know, the restaurant.
Now there is a scene in the film that the lead lady, I wouldn't even call her a lead, more of a supporting, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And our main character discusses drill sergeant. And constantly harp on that. And I really felt when the writing, that this was something that really happened in a relationship to somebody.
True enough. It was a bit of a comp. All these characters are kind of composite characters with Andre, my co-writer. And I will say he was in the army. And so there's, you know, some of these things made their way into the film. So yeah, it was, and it was all improvised. The dialogue we had written, you know, scenes with a few lines, but, really, really let the characters, actors, own it. And, but yeah, Drill Sergeant was one of those lines.
I'm going to try not to spoil this. I'm going to try to hint around as much as I can. The supporting woman I'm talking about and the lead.
Yep.
Don't seem compatible with me at any time during this film. Was that a plan, or am I missing something?
So there's Patrick, and then there's his girlfriend Lisa.
That's what I'm talking about.
And you're saying compatible? Just explain more about that.
I'm more interested that they didn't seem to be a click, even when he's taking care of her child, and he doesn't want to help the child with the homework. He just says, whatever, and moves on. And then they have dinner, and so obviously Patrick goes his own way for a while, for half the film, and then comes back later, which I will get to later. I just didn't ever feel they were together as a couple. Now, is that because when I came in the relationship where I'm at the breakdown of the relationship, and that's what you had planned for me? So I didn't get to see them as a couple. You just brought me in when, boom, this is what's going to happen next.
Yeah, well, they were a couple right at the beginning. They were in bed, and it starts off with a dream sequence, right?
Yes.
And they're in bed, and so they're together. They're a couple. But as I say, things are going on off in Patrick's head. And, things kind of go in a bad direction, you know, like – Right to start off with, right? And then there's some things that happen that make her fearful of him, right? So there's a lot of tension, a lot of action.
I did feel that. Now, I do feel that Patrick has to figure out a lot of stuff in this film. And I really think you could even drop the whole Lisa subline at one point and just let Patrick figure himself out for the rest of the film. I think as a viewer, I'd be upset we didn't come back at one point to get back there.
Right.
Because I really was happy when he was trying to hook up with the other lady.
Oh, okay, yes, right, great. That was a little happier, wasn't it? And he was on medications by that time. He was a little more stable, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Did you ever think of letting them be a couple when you were writing?
Well, that character was a bit of a contrast because it was sort of – it sort of represented he got on his medication and started doing better, right? And this sort of represented, another side of him and a side where he didn't have to think about all his problems. And that other love interest or whatever that was, it was sort of a contrast to this relationship where he was dealing with his stuff. With this other woman, it was more of a fling.
Okay, fair enough. That's why I took it. Yep. I'm just wondering if there was a script that'd go that way. If you ever thought it maybe go a different way?
Yeah, no. It was, touch.
Fair enough. When a guy brings over pizza and beer and Patrick doesn't touch it, what's going on there? I was a little upset with him at that point. Is the viewer supposed to be upset with Patrick at that point? Get your life together, buddy.
Yeah, he was in a bad place. His buddy came over from work, right? And he was trying to kind of actually checking in on him a bit and checking up on him. It's like, hey, you know, like, what's wrong, Patrick? Get your life together. And so he really felt a little threatened there. So it the beer and pizza never happened. But if you notice, the beer stayed behind.
I did notice that. Now, I did want to ask, was there real pizza in the pizza box? Is always my favorite question to ask.
Well, you know, Frank Zappia, he was one of the actors and the producer of the film, Italian. And so, yeah, there was pizza. There was pizza in the pizza box.
Well, I have to ask. It probably smelled good. And he drinks a real beer, I presume?
Yes.
See, I have to make this. Now we go into the winter of Winnipeg, which is, I'm sure, not enjoyable for anybody from Ontario. But we have bad winters, but you guys are probably ahead of us. How is filming a car in the winter?
It's, you know, Winnipeg is a stormy place and really unpredictable and really cold and really extreme. Like, it's like, you know, 30 Celsius here. At this time, 6 months later, it's going to be minus 30, right? And that kind of stuff is tricky and difficult, and you try to stay indoors as much as you can, keep the camera indoors, and keep going.
So that didn't answer my question. You're set. So how did you film the scene then? You didn't film this from indoors.
You know what? This is like your sound question.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to remember to remind me of the car scene. I can't recall
it. I think Patrick's getting into a car and is driving off, and you're staying. I think you shoot it from behind would be my guess.
Yes. Okay. That was just out of time, and he was going to Minneapolis to visit this other girl. Exactly. And so he pulls over. He's having a bit of a breakdown, right? And,
yes.
And then he takes a couple pills and he's on his way again.
I'm trying to be vague.
you're trying to, how did, you know, it's just natural for us. It's like, it's, I don't know. It's like, you just do it, right? I filmed a lot of stuff. All of our movies have a lot of outdoor scenes in the winters, and I don't know. You just get used to it. I'm not even sure. We just do it.
Fair enough.
Winnipeg.
Now, Winnipeg. Your lead character has a big transitional change at one point. I say the look of him 100% changes.
Yes.
Now, was that planned in the script, or is that just something he did on his own and you incorporated it into the script?
Yeah. Good question. It comes at a point where, so up till that point, he's not doing very well. And like he's not getting along with Lisa's daughter. And so he goes to the doctors, right? And there's a medication, a pharmaceutical component to this film. So he takes the pharmaceuticals and it transforms him, right? And so it's this new character. He's making the sales at work, right? And so it's this idea that he believes in this medication so much that and so there's a psychological component to it, is that it makes him better. His thoughts make him better at a certain level. He thinks better. He's not toxic anymore, right? Toxic, non-toxic.
So that is why he changed his look? Did you want him to change his look as a director, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, because it represented this catalyst, this potion in his life that kind of helped him forget about his problems.
Okay, there is a shot I did want to discuss. It's a dream sequence. Patrick is in a hole, and he's coming out of a hole.
Right.
Is that a CGI effect or a real hole? Because I've watched it twice, and I still can't make that decision.
Yes. So north of Winnipeg, about an hour, there's this big lake. It's like the 10th largest lake in the world. It's called Lake Winnipeg. And there's beautiful beaches there, beautiful sand beaches. So we went out one day and dug a hole right on the edge and planted Patrick in that hole. And so it's all live.
Okay, because I was like, because I'm watching him try to get out, and he's pushing on the side. I'm like, that's got to be real.
What's happened?
You're so tight in the shot, so I'm kind of like, I got to ask.
Right.
Because I'm like.
In fact, there's a really good story. There's a documentary that goes along with the film. And basically, there's this, the whole cast and crew just about fall off. It's on the side of a cliff, in the sandy cliff, and we just about all fall off. The tree starts falling off. Everything starts falling apart. But we pulled back together, and you didn't see it in the scene.
No, we definitely did not. So I want to discuss Bump Keys. It comes to like just this weird side plot at one point in the film. My probably favorite character is this character, who's only in it briefly, but I always like him when he shows up. He seems to have something positive to say to Patrick, seems to give Patrick good advice.
Yeah.
And I had never heard of Bump. Sorry, go ahead.
He's the wise. He's got some wisdom to share. He's got some stories. He's had a few experiences.
So, Bump Keys. I actually had to look this up to see if Bump Keys existed. I don't know if anybody else had to, but I had never heard of this. So where does Bump Keys come from? Like, you can't ad-lib that, I don't think.
No, I think it's a real thing. It's a lot of those flourishes are Andre's, my co-writer, and Bump Keys. It's he had a friend who actually sold Bump Keys. So these are like master kind of keys that. That you can, get into anywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can, so you can sell them. It's a side thing for some people.
I thought that was great. I'm like, do these things exist? I mean, so when you've shown this film in the past, did people ask you about the Bump Keys or nobody cares about the Bump Keys?
I think you're the first, actually. But I agree with you. The Bump Keys, I think there are a lot of little flourishes like that make it kind of odd and unique.
I like that. So you as a director, when you read that in the script, do you research Bump Keys to see if they exist or you just accept they exist?
Well, Andre, he like I say, his friend sold Bump Keys. So he knew this in depth. And so we put it in the script. Just something... It's like I guess it's kind of odd and strange and something that character would do, which is, just a little off.
Fair enough. We go back and meet Lisa a second time. I don't think I'm ruining anything. And I would say Lisa's changed too. Patrick has changed to the far left.
Yes.
Lisa's gone to the far right. Like, that's just opposite.
That's exactly right. Yep.
And I was sitting there, and you're going to have to help me here a bit. Filming this scene, I definitely felt there was no connection again at this point.
Yep.
Like, we saw a decline earlier, and they come back together. And then Lisa went all religious all of a sudden. I'm like, where is this coming from? So.
Yeah.
How is the director? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, there's a moment where Lisa gets really fearful. She's at home,
mm-hmm.
and something comes through her window, right?
Yes, a rock or something.
And that's a trigger, and a rock. But if you look closely, it's a puzzle piece.
Oh,
it's something from the game, and you wouldn't notice that, but it's. There's a few layers to the film, but regardless, she's fearful. She lives alone. She has a daughter. She's trying to make a go of it, and now someone's stalking her. And so it's like when you're needing some security, you return to some of those things in the past that have given you some security. And so her faith and religion was a part of that she returned to. That was part of her story. And Patrick didn't understand that at all because religion makes no sense to him. And so that's where the clash comes from.
Well, Lisa makes a point, and so does Patrick make a point in the film. And Patrick says, why are you here? This is something we used to joke about.
Right.
And I guess as a viewer, I was wondering, as a director, did you have to work them up to say things like that to each other? Right. Because you're saying they were ad-libbing the script. So I was kind of figuring out where these lines were coming from now.
Yeah, there's sort of in points and out points for every scene. And so we go back into their backstory. And she had left religion, essentially, before. And so the religion was a bit of a joke to them both. And it doesn't make sense to him, you know, why she's returning to this sort of foreign way of thinking. And so that's sort of, it's this conversation about their past and how different they are, and how Patrick his heart isn't open. He's not looking to really understand Lisa. He's quite into his head at that point.
Now, do you feel once the film is closed and end, Patrick's going to have a second story? Because I really feel there's more to Patrick coming. Like, I would like to see his next evolution.
Yeah,
because I just felt this was just chapter one. I think there should have been a chapter two coming.
Yeah, that's a good point, because at the end, like, we kind of end where we began. He's having these dreams, right? These visions. Like you say, he's planted in a garden, right? And there's his football player watering him, right? So it's very, very kind of strange image. And so the image is, there's something about him growing, right? He's like a plant. He's like a tree, and he's growing. And so there's something of that symbolic to what's happening inside of him. So we end the film, he's a different guy again, right?
Yes.
He's talking to, he's at work, and he's, seems pretty positive about work, and he seems quite centered. And so there's some questions about something happened to Patrick, something spiritual, I would say, and we don't really know what it was. And so there's a part two, not that we made, but
fair enough. You know. Now, I do have one more scene I really want to go into, which you will know I'm discussing. Nobody else will, unless hopefully they've seen the film. Patrick does a good run in the snow at one point.
Yep.
How is that for the actor?
It must be warm in Toronto, because this is just normal here in Winnipeg. You know, running, you know, it's just, to be honest, it seemed like filming indoors. I'm not sure. There was no problem, really, honestly. Let's go outside, let's film, go.
Well, I'm not saying it's warm, but I usually don't, if I see people running, usually they're wearing a coat. They're not just bare arms going for it.
Yeah. No, he was, and part of the idea there is it's part of a bit of a breakdown.
Oh, for sure it is.
Yeah. It worked. The snow helped.
Fair enough. Now, as a director, you have a script in and a script out, so I understand you have a beginning and an end. How many times do you have to reshoot a scene if you're not happy with the dialogue you're hearing? Or you're like, okay, that's good, but we need to work on this part. How often does that happen?
Yeah, probably every scene. And especially improvising, right? That makes it even more difficult, because it's not the same lines twice. And how do you cut between shots, right? So we're finding things as we're shooting, right? So the characters are talking, like you say, at that restaurant scene, and we need to change things. We need maybe a little more conflict, or a little less conflict, or more arc. You know, so there's a number of takes, but you only have so much time. So maybe like four or five takes.
Now that leads me
to the next one.
I'll ask about the editing process. You have four or five takes to edit.
Yeah.
And let's say you like two lines from here and two lines from there and two lines for that.
Yeah.
Now, how long does it take you to edit a scene then?
Yeah, it takes a while. We had another editor come in to kind of help piece things together because it was a bit of a puzzle. It was like you're saying, it's a bit of a puzzle to make it work. And really there's what they say in filmmaking is there's three films. There's the film you write, there's the film you shoot, and then there's the film you edit. So yeah, it kind of turns into a different film. It changes based on what take you use. And, so it took longer to edit than shoot for sure.
Oh, I can believe that. Absolutely. So when you're in Winnipeg, I presume you only have a small pool of actors, and maybe you have a large pool of actors. In your film, are they maybe, I don't know the proper term is, Winnipeg residents, or do you import from other places?
Yeah, they were all Winnipeg residents, actors. We've got, I think Winnipeg is like the third, is it the third largest film industry in Canada? Like there's Toronto, Vancouver. I think Winnipeg's number three.
Oh, wow.
Calgary, maybe. Yeah. So there's a big industry. Like the our director of photography, he was working in the film industry doing camera and editing, and the actors, they all work in the film industry as well. So there's a significant pool to draw from here.
So when you were casting for this film, did you have your role set in mind? Because I do find the boss has a certain look. I find his buddy has a certain look. Patrick obviously has a certain look. Lisa has a certain look. The daughter has to look like Lisa's daughter, you presume. Yep. So how did that all come together?
Yeah, well, there's we've made three short films, and we've actually made another feature after this. And Lyle, the main character, Patrick, is sort of our guy. He kind of there's a connection we have together, and so that's sort of often the center of a film. And then from there, we cast Frank Zappia. He's the co-producer and actor as well. He's there, and yeah, we put out a casting call or talk to people that we know and go from there.
Fair enough. Now, how is feeding a crew? I mean, if you have 8 months of shooting, that's a lot of catering. I hope you have somebody making you food, or how do you bring that in?
Yeah, well, it's Frank's mom is a great cook, and his wife is a great cook. And he knows his friend is an owner of a restaurant, and so he gets deals there, veal parmesan and pizza, and Frank's a very, very organized, scheduled guy, so he knows how many people there are at every scene, and just orders more than enough food for everyone, and that was that's how we got paid, right? Or how the actors got paid.
Fair enough. You know, you're a Canadian filmmaker. When your film is done, do you get to show it in Winnipeg? Do you find that Canadians support Canadian film?
This showed at the Gimli Film Festival, which is in Manitoba on Lake Winnipeg. And then from there, it pretty much went online after that.
So what's your response been like to your film? I didn't read anything, so I'm just asking. Do people send you weird questions every once in a while? You're like, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. The response, there's so many films out there that, I don't know, maybe they don't know how to contact us, but no, I haven't had a lot of questions.
Well, that sucks, because I think your film has many, many questions.
Yeah, there's many questions, that's true.
Before we move on to fun questions, did you remember anything about the music for me, or are we just going to let that go?
This is really bad that I don't remember the music. Like, we shot this, we finished it in 2011.
And, oh my God, okay, well, I didn't know that, so I feel bad
now.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I got it right here. Just a sec.
You just want me to edit this all out. But sorry, I'm going to have to edit
this. Edgar. Edgar Oselins. He did all the sound for the movie, too. It was his score. And he had a band as well. The last song is from an album he recorded with his band. And yeah, he poured his heart into the film and a lot of his time with the, just getting the sound right. He's a real perfectionist, but really creative guy. And yeah, he recorded everything. It's quite amazing.
And before we move on to fun questions, was the soundtrack available anywhere?
It isn't. No, it's just on the film.
Fair enough. Okay, let's move on to fun questions then. Your favorite movie? Because it's the first time on the show.
I would say The Truman Show with Jim Carrey and Peter Weir is the director.
That kind of ties in.
Yeah, just it's basically a character who's kind of lost and caught up in his own little world and basically trying to find his way out.
That ties in very well with your film, too, I might add. Because your film is always based on board games, and we discuss board games, and we discuss selling of board games. You know what this question is going to be.
That's what he does, yeah. He's a board game salesman.
What's your favorite board game?
Carcassonne.
I've never played that one.
It's like, it's actually, we went there, actually we had a film last year that showed in France, and we went to Carcassonne. And it's this fortress, it's this medieval fortress in southern France, and there's a board game of you know, during that time period. Yeah, you build cities and you have farms, and it's a great board game.
Cool. Number three, if there's one actor on the planet you could work with that's still alive, who would it be?
I tell you, you know what, that's I'm just gonna have to play to you know, relationships are everything, and working with Lyle and Frank was just amazing, and you know, Kristen as well. It's I like working with people I know and having a good time, and so they would be the people I'd want.
That's fair enough as an answer. Now, I've already told everybody you can find your film on Amazon Prime. Where else is it available?
Amazon Prime is the main location.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.